You're listening to the Nerd News Network. When news breaks, we bring you the pieces. From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 132 of Little Brother for the 24th of June, 2023. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or you can post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. We have got a lot to talk about, so let's get started. If you want internet in remote locations, your choice is Starlink. This may change soon, as may a few other things. A satellite company called AST Space Mobile has teamed up with AT&T to run some experiments involving low Earth orbit satellites. But here's the kicker. Unlike Starlink, the signal delivered from the satellites is currently LTE, and they are getting ready to try 5GNR. What this means, from a practical perspective, is that you need nothing special to use this service. An ordinary run-of-the-mill cell phone is it. The service is not as fast as Starlink, but the potential to be just upgraded with no special action needed on your part? That's a game changer. Users of Synology Network Attached Storage Devices, or NASes, are reporting that hard drives installed in their NASs made by Western Digital are starting to throw warnings via the smart interface after 3 years of being powered on. The warning is not of any particular specific thing, just a warning that your hard drive is 3 years old. Users are reporting that there are otherwise no discernible issues with the drives, just that WD wants to sell you more of them. Well, this one really only warrants one sentence, since I've kind of talked about it before in other places. The state of Texas has joined a handful of other states in banning minors from participating in social media without parental consent. Enough said. A report was recently declassified, confirming what, realistically, we all kind of knew all along, specifically that the federal government is skirting the Fourth and Fifth Amendments to the Constitution by purchasing data about American citizens from third parties. The report was classified by the DDNI under orders from Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat of Oregon, and is dated January of 2022. So, what are the intelligence agencies using that purchased data to track? What kind of terrorists are they following closely? According to a report from The Intercept, for the FBI, it's pro-choice protesters. Apparently, the agency's leadership have been influenced by Republican lawmakers to lean into this choice when there are clearly more significant threats out there that the FBI should be focused on. Anyone using Microsoft Teams knows that it is an insanely useful and helpful app. Sorry, I couldn't keep a straight face. It should be an insanely useful and helpful app. In practice, it's pretty buggy, and one of those bugs has made it easy for threat actors to use it as a vector to deliver malware from outside of an organization. It seems as though a carefully crafted set of HTTP headers are all it takes to fool teams into believing that a user outside of an organization is actually inside of it, thus bypassing blocks that are put in place to prevent malicious content from being sent in from outside. It seems like security measures a little bit more robust than an HTTP header might be in order, but what do I know? Those of us from Generation X will feel a twinge of nostalgia at hearing the name Activision. Back in the day, the video game company, made up of former Atari employees, was responsible for creating many of the titles available from the then-ubiquitous Atari 2600 game console. They've recently been poised to be acquired by Microsoft, but on Tuesday, a federal judge temporarily halted the move in order to hear objections from the Federal Trade Commission. Meanwhile, McDonald's has also tapped into Gen X nostalgia, in maybe a good way. The fast food giant have commissioned a video game called Grimace's Birthday and released it as a cartridge for the Nintendo Game Boy Color. The game is a skater-themed platformer. Not to be outdone, though, there is this company that is called Atari. Now, they aren't the same Atari that we Gen Xers remember from our childhood as the company that was behind the first game console, but rather somebody who bought the name. But nonetheless, they are paying homage to the history behind the name by releasing an early version of a video game that they're producing, which early version runs on that very same console from 1977. The game, called Mr. Run and Jump, is, as its name implies, a platformer and will later be released for the PC and for other gaming consoles. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. A vulnerability has surfaced in GitHub, and if you use GitHub, you should be aware of this. The attack is called repo jacking, and in essence, the vulnerability expresses when a username is changed on a GitHub account. While the paths are changed to match the new username, links are created that allow the old path to continue to work. In and of itself, that's probably okay and actually a nice convenience, because it prevents links that may be posted to the repository in any given place on the web from becoming dead links. However, things go south from there. If someone comes along and creates a new account with the old account name, boom, they now have access to the repositories formerly known by that name. Let me give you an example. Let's suppose, for the sake of the argument, that I had a GitHub repo under the username Chuck Ritter. Just assume that I jammed the first and last name together. That's fine. Now, one day, I decide I want to pay homage to my heritage and change the first name to its German counterpart. So I rename the account Carl Ritter. That's Carl with a K, of course. And when I do that, the credentials for Chuck Ritter no longer work, but the links that point to my repo with Chuck Ritter in the path, those do still work, as do newer links with Carl Ritter. Now, someone comes along and registers an account as Chuck Ritter. They don't need to do anything more, and just poof, now they have full access to my repositories as though they were their own. I do imagine that GitHub will fix this at some point in time. However, in the meantime, if you have ever changed the name of your account on GitHub, you need to plug this hole and you need to do it now. And the way to do that is to go register a new account with the old account name, and that will prevent your repositories from being repo jacked. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned Recently. Technically, we have four, but one of them is Reddit, and I'll talk about that one later on in this episode. So let's talk about the other three. First up, we have the UK's Office of Communications, or Ofcom, which is their counterpart to the Federal Communications Commission here in the US. So apparently, Ofcom got breached, and the threat actors made off with a tranche of confidential data. The malware used in the attack is MoveIt, which is designed to seek out and exfiltrate sensitive data. According to Ofcom, information about some of the companies that they regulate and the personal information of approximately 400 employees was exfiltrated. The attack was landed on the system of one of the agent's contractors rather than Ofcom itself. It is not believed to have infected any of their internal systems. Not to be outdone, you're going to hear that phrase a lot today, not to be outdone, the U.S. federal government fell prey to the same malware. Most impacted was the Department of Energy. They are being assisted, as they do, by the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. The impacts are under investigation. For our third pwn, we go to Illinois, where the already overtaxed medical industry, I refuse to call it a system, has taken a blow. St. Margaret's Health in Spring Valley will be closing its doors, citing the causes as a shortage of staff, lingering impacts from the pandemic, and a devastating cyber attack. There's been a new development in the battle over your right to repair what you own. So, back in 2020, the state of Massachusetts, the voters, voted to extend their state's right to repair law for cars. The ballot measure required, quote, manufacturers that sell vehicles with telematics systems in Massachusetts to equip them with a standardized open data platform beginning with model year 2022, that vehicle owners and independent repair facilities may access to retrieve mechanical data and run diagnostics through a mobile-based application, end quote. 3 years later, the federal government is stepping in and vetoing this. According to Reuters, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has stated in a letter to major automakers that they do not need to comply with the Massachusetts law. The concern is that a malicious actor, quote, could utilize such open access to remotely command vehicles to operate dangerously, including attacking multiple vehicles concurrently, end quote. As a longtime advocate for and user of open source software, to the exclusion of commercial solutions at every possible turn, I can only say that the odor of the finest farmland fertilizer is strong in that statement. Quite the opposite is true, in fact. Open standards, open specifications, open designs, open source. They lead to superior security because you can see where the flaws, bugs, and warts are, and they get handled. So, anyway, the federal government has told the voters of Massachusetts that they do not matter, and did so in a way that supports major corporations at the expense of the people. Yeah, that tracks. There's been a lot of AI news in the past couple of weeks, so let's take a crack at sorting out the highlights. Let us start with the journal Nature. Nature is a science journal that's been in publication for 153 years, mostly covering exactly what topic you would expect, nature. I mean, you don't get a much more descriptive title than nature, right? Artificial intelligence is, of course, artificial, the literal opposite of natural. So, what has this got to do with nature? As it turns out, nothing. So little, in fact, that the editors have opted to remind everyone of this by explicitly prohibiting the use of AI-generated artwork in the journal. The music industry, on the other hand, has embraced it. Early last week, Sir Paul McCartney, speaking on BBC4, stated that experts have been able to extricate, his word, John Lennon's voice from some old demo tapes, and that they are intending to use this to produce one final Beatles album. There is no news about whether or not a sullen AI George Harrison will be sitting in the corner strumming a sitar and glaring at the others. It appears as though AMD are beginning production of AI-specific processor chips and is targeting cloud service providers. There are discussions between AMD and Amazon AWS, who are allegedly considering the use of the new chips. Of course, the interesting thing about Amazon AWS is how it came into being in the first place. Essentially, they built infrastructure to support the e-commerce side of the business, and then they started renting out their spare capacity. The rest is just profitable mission creep. I mention this, though, because it should therefore come as no surprise that Amazon's e-commerce business wants to use AI tech, and they want to use it to summarize product reviews. It'll be interesting to see how it does this, but I will be inclined not to trust the summary on the grounds that Amazon wants to sell stuff, and bad reviews don't do that. With summaries being available, people will be less likely to read the actual reviews. In other news, as AI-generated content begins to populate the web with content of all kinds, some researchers have started to warn about a problem. What happens when the AI starts learning not from human-generated content, but from content generated by other AI? You see, the problem here is that the learning process, both human and artificial, is somewhat error-prone. As human beings, we can correct for this by directly observing, making corrections to what we think we learned, etc. Now, while AI can check multiple sources, something many humans don't even bother to do, they are not able to make direct observations, and as the information starts going around and around and around in this loop, it's going to start to degrade in a synthetic counterpart to the telephone game that we've probably all played at one point in life, to warn us of the danger of spreading rumors. Mercedes, I hear, have decided to add ChatGPT to its infotainment system in some of their higher-end vehicles. I have just one question. Why? Well, it appears as though the idea is to allow for queries that are a lot more complex than a traditional navigation system might be able to handle. Okay. I'll give them points for maybe finding a good use there. It does give me two concerns, though. First is my ongoing concern about cars being connected to everything all the damn time. But the other is, what happens when ChatGPT is no longer the new hotness? Infotainment systems in cars have exceptionally long service lives by modern electronics norms, and that system is going to go obsolete way too fast. Back in February, in episode 119, I talked about Microsoft's addition of ChatGPT to their Bing search engine, with the result that the search engine declared its undying love for New York Times tech columnist Kevin Roose and began trying to persuade him to leave his wife for the AI. Well, apparently Microsoft were warned against this by OpenAI, the organization behind ChatGPT. Despite the warnings, Microsoft decided to move forward with the deployment on the philosophy that the AI would have to learn in the real world in order to be aligned with the way that the real world works. While this is not exactly wrong, one would think that there would be someone in that organization that would remember how well that worked with Tay. Finally, let's talk about the legal beat with AI. A number of times, You will have heard me talk glowingly about Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act of 1996, which protects websites from responsibility for the actions of their users, without which much of the internet couldn't operate in the way it does. Without it, message forums couldn't operate because all messages would have to be held for moderation before they could appear publicly. Large sites like Reddit, Facebook, Twitter, etc. couldn't exist like that. Anyway, what this has to do with AI is that there is now a bipartisan bill before the Congress, introduced by Senators Josh Hawley, a Republican of Missouri, and Senator Richard Blumenthal, a Democrat of Connecticut, which would deny Section 230 protection to content generated by AI. This will enable websites that use AI to be held legally, civilly responsible for anything that is generated by the AI. And that is the latest in the world of artificial intelligence. Oh my fucking gods, can we fucking fuck off with all the fucking ads already? There is a gas station here in Schenectady that consistently comes in at 2 cents per gallon lower than the one across the street from it. Both of them are consistently lower than everybody else for a few miles around. Despite the 2 cents, I usually go to the one that is across the street. Why? Simple. I can't stand the fact that while I'm trying to listen to whatever I have on my car radio while I pump gas, the fucking gas pump is playing a fucking ad. So for 2 cents more per gallon, I get my gas without the ads. Well, news comes out this week that Uber is taking this idea their own way. Apparently, armed with the knowledge of where you are, where you've been, and the ability to infer from that what you've been doing, they're going to run full-length video ads on your device in their application when you order an Uber. You're paying for this fucking service. This should come without ads. This news seems in itself like a really, really good ad by itself for Lyft. At least until Lyft gets the same stupid fucking idea. All right. Reddit. What can we say about the latest of social media meltdowns? So, before I get into this, I feel like I have to remind everybody, whether you like it or not, Reddit is a business. It needs to make a profit to stay in business. It's been operating at a loss. It's getting ready for an IPO, which is going to make them want to turn a profit. Regardless of whether or not they're doing it right, hint, they're not. It is nonetheless a private property, and the management are fully within their rights to run it into the ground any way they want. Run it any way they want. As a reminder, the primary bone of contention here is that Reddit wants to start charging a mint for API access. Go back and listen to episode 131 if you need a recap. So, let's start with what has happened since. Let's start with Steve Huffman, Reddit's CEO, known on the platform as Spez. One thing that has become clear is that he doesn't know how to handle a crisis. First off, a number of subreddits went dark, turning either private or restricted on Monday the 12th and staying that way for at least 48 hours. Some subs opted to stay live because of perceived value to their communities, such as rhsp or rsysadmin, but many of the largest ones didn't. Huffman's response? Oh, that'll pass. Oh, you know what else he said? Quote, I am sorry to say this, but please be mindful of wearing Reddit gear in public. Some folks are really upset, and we didn't want you to be the object of their frustrations, end quote. Okay. So he knows that the community is upset. That's a sign that he's not unreachable, not untouchable. Maybe he'd soften his tone? I kid. How about this? Quote, If you're a politician or a business owner, you are accountable to your constituents. So a politician needs to be elected and a business owner can be fired by its shareholders. And I think on Reddit, the analogy is closer to the landed gentry. The people who get there first get to stay there and pass it down to their descendants, and that is not democratic, end quote. Number one, you yourself just said that that is not a democracy. It's a business. That said, the fuck do you know about democratic principles, Spaz? You call what you're doing democratic? If the protesters didn't agree, the protest leaders wouldn't have anyone to lead. Hello, McFly, this is your fucking market speaking to you. Take the $100 bills out of your ears and listen. You're fighting a losing battle. You've upset your user base. Without us, Reddit is nothing. Zero. Just ask MySpace. Is this your right? Of course it is. It is also colossally stupid. So anyway, on Monday the 12th, the first day of the blackout, all of the shifting from public to private proved to be a bit more than Reddit's servers could handle, and the site went down. So that was a thing. In the aftermath of the blackout, as most subs have returned to active, some have decided to continue the protest in other ways. RPix, for instance, has committed to only posting pictures of John Oliver looking sexy. I shit you not. At the time of writing, I checked, and lo and behold, that's exactly what the sub contains right now. Other subs have gone harder. For instance, with the moderators tagging all of the content as NSFW. Why? Well, put simply, Reddit can't sell ads on NSFW content. By engaging that tag, it cuts into Reddit's bottom line. What's more, some of these subs have gone a step further and actually only allowed actual NSFW content to be posted on previously safe for work subs. So, while we're giving new definition to the phrase Reddit drama, I'm hearing rumblings that Reddit has started removing protesting moderators and replacing them. As with the account bans that I talked about last week, we can wonder if other things are going on as well, but we can't discount the fact that the Reddit management are going to be a bit on edge right now. Now, the original advice that I would have given with that bit of news about the removals is to take it with a grain of salt, as the source was 4chan. However, it has since surfaced in more reputable publications who are stating that they have been in touch with those removed moderators. I'll mention one last thing, and that is that apparently some confidential data have been allegedly exfiltrated. And the threat actors in control of that data, supposedly about 80 gigabytes, are threatening to release it unless a ransom of $4.5 million is paid and the API pricing is rescinded. 80 gigabytes makes me think it might be stored in someone's head. So, yeah, that's the Reddit roundup for this episode. It's been, in my opinion, very popcorn worthy, and I find myself wondering just how much of this they can take. I'll be keeping an eye on this. It's not clear exactly when the IPO is expected, but it looks like it's supposed to be in the second half of this year. So get the popcorn popping. If nothing interesting happens, you can always watch, I don't know, Johnny Mnemonic or something. Throughout the course of this episode, I've talked about a number of things that are annoying: advertising, surveillance, inability to repair things, and this segment is no different. Now, I know that I am not alone when I say that I hate with the fire of a thousand suns when I am quoted a price for a thing, only to have a bunch of crap tacked on at the end that I can't opt out of. Gallagher put it quite well when he talked about tire shops advertising a nice low price for new tires for your car. But then there are little extras like, do you actually want them on the car? Cable television is a dying industry at this point, but it has historically been a major perpetrator of this particular annoying behavior. If you quote me a price of $45, I'll forgive you sales tax. But beyond that, I'd better be able to hand you two Jacksons and a Lincoln and have the bill squared. It doesn't work that way, though, does it? On top of that, there are things like regional sports network fees and broadcast TV fees. I don't give two shits about sports. So just don't give me those channels, okay? I don't need them. I'll opt out. Oh, I can't do that. Well, then why is this a fee? Shouldn't this be part of the price of cable? Okay. How about broadcast? I have an antenna. It gets me a better picture than you do anyway. So, I mean, you can just drop those, right? Oh. No? Oh. Well, that must be it's part of the price of the service then, huh? So anyway, way too late, the FCC is finally starting to crack down on this behavior. As they're starting down the path of mandating this all-in pricing, they are first collecting data. Yep, the FCC asked all of the nation's cable and satellite TV providers to send them a complete list of all of their fees and levies that they charge. Well, according to Ars Technica, Comcast in particular had a response that is just plain not acceptable. We can't do that. It's too hard. There's too many of them. Fucking whiners. It's in your billing system. If you can charge it, you can enumerate it. And if you can enumerate it, you can report it. If you're looking for sympathy, you are not going to find it. You made this mess. Fucking suck it up and deal with it. There's good reasons why, as soon as alternatives appeared, people started leaving you in droves. All right. While this next bit is not really tech news, it's related. Apparently, other portions of the federal government are looking at other businesses where there are junk fees abundant. Ticketmaster. Ticketmaster is notorious for it. Yes, you can have your tickets for $40, but you're going to pay a fee for the facility and a fee for actually taking possession of your tickets. Taxes, a convenience fee for the convenience of them deigning to sell you a ticket. Well, now that the attention is turned to them, they, along with SeatGeek, have suddenly decided to commit to not doing that anymore. I can't for the life of me figure out why this took so fucking long.
Lobbyists!
Excuse me. Allergies again. All right, I've got a couple of OPSEC items for this episode. First up, the Microsoft Edge web browser that comes by default with Windows has a feature called Follow Creator. This feature is turned on by default, and the intent seems good enough. Provide a simple means for you to follow your favorite content creators across multiple platforms. In theory, it should be kicking in only when you are on certain websites, such as YouTube, and it will send information to Bing's APIs about what you're visiting to help you find other similar content. The problem is that this feature is sending constant data to Bing about what you're doing. This seems contrary to the stated intent and certainly undesirable. The best course of action is to use a different browser. Now, you can ask two nerds what the best browser is to use, and you'll get four or five answers because it's actually a pretty rich environment. But I don't think you will hear Edge mentioned in any of those responses. I will, however, reserve the right to be wrong in that assessment. For what it's worth, I use Brave and Firefox depending on what I am doing. The next best course of action is to turn this feature off. The other item I have concerns Apple's iOS. iOS 17, it is reported, will give you the ability to revert a password change for 72 hours. What are the implications of that? First, the good. This means that if you enter a new password, which you probably should do from time to time, and then you forget it right away, you can recover quickly and easily. However, the bad news is that it makes it difficult to lock your device against someone who has, through whatever means, learned your old password. This is a situation that most casual users won't encounter, but could, for instance, if you have an untrustworthy family member. In that case, you'd better make sure that your phone never leaves your side for those 72 hours. As usual, we'll end the show with the fail of the fortnight. A side channel attack is when data is slicked off of a device or communications channel by unusual means. Rather than reading the data directly, the data is inferred by observing something else. For instance, listening to the sound of someone typing to infer what they may have typed, or analyzing the radio waves that are incidentally given off by a digital circuit to determine what it's processing. These, by the way, are both real things. The newest side channel attack is to analyze the light given off by a smart card reader. So many smart card readers have an indicator light that shows things like power, or when the card's in use, or whatever. Well, Ars Technica is reporting that research have been able to read meaningful data using video captured by a more or less ordinary video camera from a smart card reader in the patterns of fluctuations of the indicator light. These fluctuations are being caused by matching fluctuations in the power demands of the cryptographic processor, and using this technique, the researchers were able to successfully read the cryptographic keys off of such a card from a distance of 60 feet. Now, the good news is that this could be remedied in a few different ways. One option is to add power supply filtering to the card reader so that the fluctuations do not reach the indicator light. Another is to invert the light so that it's lit when the card is absent but goes out when you put the card in. However, the simplest and most obvious solution? Just don't put a light on it. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fungaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to Thriller at Play, Fungaboo, Azrael, Knight Rider 007, Julie Bernstein, and DOA for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwned music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Fortnite music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker, and our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast, or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next time when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Episode 133 will drop on July 14th. Stay safe and be well.